Welcome to Trade Finance Talks, a podcast from Trade Finance Global. During this series, we'll be hearing from global experts, as well as learning about the latest trends, technology, and insights in the world of international trade and receivables finance. Episode 12.
Let's imagine, for instance, that there will be, in the future, no regulation. Maybe one of the solutions will be new technology. The appearance of new players, newcomers in this industry.
I'm Dipesh Patel, editor at Trade Finance Global. The trade finance gap lies at around $1.5 trillion. Regulation and compliance, while set in best interests, may, however, be leading to the exacerbation of this trade finance gap. So how do we ensure that regulation does not hinder the provision of trade finance and promote its fair regulatory treatment? The International Chamber of Commerce Banking Commission recently released a white paper urging the trade finance industry to work together, ensuring that regulation does not hinder the availability of trade finance. Here to discuss their recent report, Banking Regulation and the Campaign to Mitigate the Unintended Consequences for Trade Finance, is Olivier Paul, Director of Finance for Development at the ICC, joining us live from Paris. Hi Olivier, thank you for joining us on Trade Finance Talks. In no more than 30 seconds, tell us your elevator pitch. Who are you and what do you do at the ICC?
Yeah, thank you. My career started quite a long time ago now, more than 30 years in the banking industry. I was with a large international bank and I had several positions, mainly all relating to international business. So I was running the export finance business line for a significant period of 10 years. And then I moved to trade finance, where I was in charge of developing new products and ensuring a correct level of exchange with our partners and especially with the regulating bodies as well. I joined ICC 2 years and a half ago, where I am in charge of the Banking Commission. And as you know, this Banking Commission has, we can summarize in three main missions. First one, the most well-known one, is to provide the market with rules on trade finance products. The second one is advocacy and advocacy role, i.e. ensuring a dialogue with the regulators to make sure that the voice of the industry is taken into account. And then, of course, the last one is the financial inclusion, is all initiatives that we can take to ensure a large access for all players to trade finance business.
Thank you, Olivier. So international trade really is an engine for economic growth, and the ICC does play a huge role in facilitating this as an organization and as the only private sector observer to the UN General Assembly. So Basel III is a set of banking recommendations for the prudential regulation of banks. Where do we stand with Basel III today, and how does this impact trade?
Well, we are now entering into the phase of implementation of Basel III. So, as you know, we had a long discussion together with different authorities, including the Basel Committee, of course, but not only, also with European authorities and others, to make sure of the correct interpretations of guidelines provided by the Basel Committee. Because as you know, the Basel Committee is issuing some guidance that then go to different region level, Americas, Europe, Asia. And then when it goes from this regional level, it goes to the national level. So we have to make sure that at those different layers of decision process, the interpretation and the implementation will be made on a sustainable way and, more importantly, on a homogeneous way. What is very important in the regulation today is that we make sure that a potential differentiation of regulation applying into one region compared to another would not create a competitive differentiation among the different players that could create hurdles in a particular region. So we are in this phase of implementing the recommendation of Basel III. We have done a lot of works. We have obtained already some good results in that respect, but we still have some discussions to have in the coming month to make sure that this implementation one more time will be achieved in a proper way.
Great. Thank you very much. So now let's move on to another key topic within trade and trade finance. Anti-money laundering and countering the financing of terrorism are key priorities, particularly for the trade finance industry. Your recent survey, the 10th Global Survey on Trade Finance, indicated that some 93% of banks see regulation and compliance as an obstacle to growth and the provision of trade finance. Do you think we've gone too far with compliance? And what's the implication for providing liquidity to businesses?
I would say the first element of answer is to say that definitely we need regulation among the various regions, among the various players, among the various partners, not only at the banking industry level, but also on the corporate side. And we have to make sure that transactions we are dealing with are organized, monitored, managed in a proper way. So we need regulation. On the compliance side, more specifically on the compliance side, I think it is exactly the same thing. We need absolutely to have common standards. We need to have common guidelines and common way to approach the compliance issues. Anti-money laundering, combating the terrorism is one of the key issues that all players with the international trade will have to deal with in the coming months and in the coming years. So I don't think we have been too far in that respect. I don't think so. What we need now is, one more time, homogeneity among the various countries. We need to have a common way to approach AML issues, the setup of level of controls, reporting, and survey that has to be done. It has to be done in a homogeneous way among the various countries. And the second aspect is that we need stability. We need stability in the guidelines that are released in the different countries, in the different regions, at the banking level, at the corporate level, to make sure that we are all talking the same language. I think what is felt today by the players, if we feel that there is a hurdles that are created by those requirements in terms of compliance, it is not because of the level of requirement, it's more because of the instability of those requirements. But it is true at the same time that as long as you increase the level of control, of course it creates additional costs in the implementation of one transaction, and this additional cost has to be absorbed by someone. And this is where maybe there will be difficulties in the future, because the implementation of new transactions will deserve to have the correct remuneration for the different players.
Thank you. And I think talking about the business models with respect to operational costs is very important here for the banks. And we'll definitely talk about some of the progress made a little bit later on in this podcast. So let's talk about SMEs now. Some 80% of international trade flows involve the recourse to a financial instrument, according to the WTO, be that a letter of credit, guarantee, or export credit. So the rules and regulations mentioned earlier, they're affecting the banks, their corporates, and the large importers and exporters. But how is this affecting those that are in the most need of trade finance instruments, such as SMEs and those in emerging markets, which we hear so often from the ICC, from the ADB, etc.?
Well, you have mentioned that there is a $1.5 trillion financing gap that exists today. This is a very difficult figure. And of course, we have to take some initiatives. We have to take some disposition to ensure that there will be one day significant reduction, decrease of this level. If we analyze a little bit more this 1.5 trillion, what do we see? We see that a large majority of transactions which are rejected by the banking industry today are coming from SME. I think the proportion is something around 2/3. So 2/3 of the rejected transactions are coming from SME. It does not mean that 2/3 of the transactions proposed by SMEs are rejected. Huh? I'm talking about 2/3 of the rejected transactions, not 2/3 of the transactions proposed by SMEs. Because I want to be precise on this point, because from time to time I read that there is a confusion around this figure. However, it is for sure that SMEs are the categories of players in this industry which is the most impacted by the level of requirements attached to compliance, regulation, and everything. Of course, what we have to do is to define some specific features that will apply for SMEs in order to help them to have a better access to financial services and banking industry on a global basis. When we talk about such a huge amount of financing gap, I'm not sure that the banking industry, even with more flexibility in compliance issues, regulations, and everything, let's imagine, for instance, that there will be in the future no regulation, no regulation, no compliance requirements. Even with that, I'm not sure that the banking industry alone would be able to fill in this financing gap of $1.5 trillion. I'm not sure of that. Because of problem of country risk envelope, because of problem of capacity, because of problem of credit risk, I think the banking industry will not be sufficient to fill in this gap. So the solution, or maybe one of the solutions, will be new technology, the appearance of new players, newcomers in this industry. Maybe in the future, a portion of this gap will be filled not by the banking industry, but one more time by newcomers such as, I don't know, insurance company, pension fund, treasury fund, whatever it is, all institutions that would have a clear capacity in terms of funding, a clear capacity of taking some risk on a transaction with the correct level of remuneration. So this is why I come back to my previous point. I think the remuneration of those transactions is also an important point to make sure that this gap will be reduced in the future.
Yeah, I'm completely with you there. And perhaps we do need to take a look at the role of non-bank financial institutions, other technology providers and new players. And actually, we released our second issue of Trade Finance Talks, our magazine today, with a spotlight on some of the NBFIs, some of the insurance players and the role of securitization, perhaps, and other instruments to help facilitate trade. But with tech comes the need for different financiers and providers to actually talk to each other across different platforms. And standardization, I think, is another key issue and concern for the trade finance industry across many jurisdictions. Yeah. You know, it leads to ambiguity, inconsistencies, variance amongst different banks in different countries, as you know, and you bring up very frequently. So what's the view from the Banking Commission and what is being done to standardize trade terminology?
Well, this is something on which we are working on for a few months now. I think this is exactly the point you mentioned. I think what is important is to create interoperability among the various platforms. We will not create one single technology applying for everywhere and for everyone. We can be sure that there will be different DLT technology, blockchain technologies that will be developed by different countries, different fintech. And this is absolutely encouraging. As long as we have many, many people involved in this research, the good solution will emerge one day. I'm absolutely convinced of that. What is not, let's say, taken into account by one single fintech or one single bank is to make sure of the interoperability among the various platforms, which is to say that we have to create the standards allowing those different platforms to have the capacity to connect and the capacity to dialogue. We are working on that. We have set an important task force gathering dozens of large players in the banking industry
I guess the people representing those different banks in this group represent a significant portion of the market share of trade finance today. And we are working on that aspect. And we will probably announce in the coming month the preliminary results of the creation of these standards. But it will take some time. Eh? This is not an easy task, and this is not something that would produce in, I don't know, before September in 2019. That's impossible. It will take much longer than that. But we'll be successful because we have around the table the key players and the key, let's say, actors of this important move of this industry in the future. We cannot ignore this move.
Yeah. Thank you very much. And look, interoperability and the idea of a network of networks is so important. We were at Consortia 2019 BCR's conference last week talking about this and theorizing some ideas for how the different networks and consortia can work together and whether a body like ICC should be leading and paving the way for this. I'm very glad that you guys are considering e-bills of lading versus bills of lading and the shipping and logistics space, not just pure trade, letters of credit, open account, etc.
Yes.
Very, very important to take a holistic helicopter view of trade. Let's get technical now and talk a little bit more about the progress that has been made, as you mentioned earlier. So tell us about any amends in Article 55 of the BRRD, the Bank Recovery and Resolution Directive, and why can't we waive this text completely for the trade finance sector?
It would have been the best solution, of course, to waive totally trade finance of the application of the Article 55. But unfortunately, this was not possible. Don't ask me why. Maybe we should raise the question at the European level. No, but more seriously, I guess that once the concept described in the Article 55 was put on the table, applying for the many aspects of different finance products out of trade finance, it was maybe a little bit complicated to waive totally one sector of the application of this article. This being said, well, as you know, the Article 55 is aiming at, let's say, ensuring that a bank will not be destroyed somehow by commitments that this bank could have with external parties, preventing people having deposits in this bank to recover their money on their demand. So basically, the concept of, let's say, putting together some regulation aiming at protecting private people for their deposits and to ensure that these private people could recover as they wish their deposit in the bank, I think it was a good idea. All right. So no problem on the philosophy around the Article 55. The difficulty is that it's a little bit relating to what I was saying previously, is that we have to make sure that the regulation is homogeneous in the different regions. If we apply the Article 55 as it was designed at the beginning, so as such, from one day to another, to all banks that are located in Europe, we are creating a differentiation in terms of competition between the business in Europe and the business out of Europe. The introduction of a bail-in clause, one more time, the essence of the Article 55, this bail-in clause saying that the bank will, for instance, pay or fulfill its obligation under a letter of credit only if the bank has a good financial stability and a financial health, is creating a differentiation compared to other banks out of Europe, which will not have this kind of if and when clause in the obligation of payment relating to the letter of credit. And this is where we started to discuss with the European authorities to explain that, well, even if, one more time, the philosophy of the Article 55 to protect the depository is good, it is creating, if we apply it like this, it is creating large hurdles for European exporters and importers compared to other regions of the world. So what we have obtained is not a full waiver of trade finance, unfortunately, one more time, but what we have obtained is a kind of reverse application of the Article 55. It means that the Article 55 is implemented, but depending on the different jurisdiction, i.e. the different countries, where this Article 55 is supposed to be implemented, if the banks located in such country ask to the local regulator a waiver on the transactions relating to trade finance, they will obtain it. So it's a reverse procedure somehow. It means that it is not an obligation coming from Europe and then coming from the local regulator to banks to apply fully the Article 55. So there is a recommendation to apply. And if the banks are explaining to their local regulator that they are not in a position to apply this Article 55 because it will create large difficulties in the, let's say, implementation of transaction, the local regulator will give the bank, let's say, a waiver, a specific waiver for their transaction. So it is not exactly what we consider at the beginning, but we consider that the result is good. The result is good because at the end of the day, it will not impact negatively the European business compared to Asian business or America's business kind of thing. The consistency of the homogeneous way of implementing regulation will be maintained.
Yeah, so in a roundabout way, there has been some good progress there. What about NSFR, net stable funding ratios, and the negative impact of this on trading businesses?
Yeah, it's not the same story compared to Article 55, but it is more or less the same story in terms of homogeneity of the application. As you know, the NSFR has to be differentiated, taking into account the maturity of the transaction, okay? So you have a different step of maturity below 1 month, between 1 month and 6 months, and above 6 months. So in some countries, you have a flat rate of NSFR, whatever the maturity of the transaction is. And in Europe, but not only in Europe, but in Europe, you have a different rate depending on the maturity. At the beginning of our discussion, the different rates were going from 5% to 15%. Depending on the maturity. Of course, 15% for longer maturity and 5% for the short-term transaction. Compared to that, you take a country like Brazil, for instance, if I remember correctly, they have forecast to have one single rate applying to all maturity, which was limited to 3%. Okay? And you have other jurisdictions, other countries, where you do not decide not to apply any NSFR requirement. Okay? So in the world, you have, specifically on this NSFR topic, you have several and different ways to apply this requirement. So it was difficult because the European level, it was maybe one of the highest level of rates that was supposed to be applied. So discussion is not over on this field. We still have some discussion to have with Europe. But what we understand that the scale or the differentiation among the various level of rates will be reduced. So we will not go maybe from 5 to 15, but maybe we will only go from 5 to 10, for instance, which is not, one more time, exactly what we would like to obtain, but at least it is already a progress compared to the initial proposal. We still need to continue discussing on that.
Thank you. So what are the next steps for ensuring that regulation does not hinder availability of finance and remains relevant in a digital landscape?
Well, the question is a little bit difficult because it's difficult to anticipate the next step. However, I would say the following. I think we have in hand, we have knowledge of all different elements of regulation that are on the table. I do not anticipate to receive from one day to another a new topic or a new set of rules or new ideas of regulation that would come from nowhere and that would create a total different picture compared to what we have up to now. So
So we have all the elements, and we have, one more time, the knowledge of the different topic of discussion that we should have. So I think the next step is to continue ensuring a good dialogue with the regulators. One more time, we need regulation. So the concept is not to deny or to contest or whatever. The only point is that we have to accompany the business and the market in a proper way. So one more time, the next step is to continue this dialogue with the regulators. The experience shows that the regulators are listening to us, to ICC, maybe with among others, of course, but they are listening to ICC. They take into account what we say. We have demonstrated that we are in a position to obtain some good results. So we have to continue on that. The big next step, of course, is digitalization. What will be the consequences of digitalization? What will be the consequences of the appearance, the emergence of new players, which will be or which are today regulated in a different way? Of course, the constraints, the Basel Committee recommendations, for instance, do not apply to non-banks today. So how do we tackle this? How do we manage this situation? The idea also, of course, is not to open totally the game to a non-bank industry and to kill this activity for the banking industry. The idea is not there. The idea is to find a proper way to maintain and to improve the situation of the banking industry to allow them to continue to develop their business. The idea is to allow also SMEs to have a better access to financial services. And one more time, implies we have larger number of participants and players in the industry that will include, in my view, non-bank. That's absolutely for sure. But one more time, it has to be done in a homogeneous way, in a proper way, and in a fair way. The idea being not to destroy anything and to prevent anyone to be part of the game. The idea is to find the proper way to accompany this move in the future.
Thanks very much, Olivier, for your insights and knowledge into the impacts of regulation and compliance on banks and the implications this has on trade financing. I think you've brought up some really good dialogue on the need for regulation, but the potential for technology, the need to understand the business cases and models for providing liquidity to businesses, and also the role of intergovernmental bodies such as ICC in rulemaking and setting the agenda for the future of trade. So we look forward to hearing about further progress in terms of Basel Committee regulations, tackling the situation with non-banks, the digitalization, the DLT, the blockchain agenda and working groups, and I guess growing global trade, which is good and inclusive for all parties. Thank you very much, Olivier, for coming and joining us on today's podcast of Trade Finance Talks.
You're welcome. Thank you very much to you.
Thanks for listening to Trade Finance Talks. Be sure to subscribe to our podcasts at tradefinanceglobal.com.